M94.5 to go. Dein Thema des Tages.
Abends mit Freunden auf dem Olympiaberg sitzen, die Aussicht und den Sonnenuntergang genießen und am besten ein Gläschen Roséwein dazu schlürfen. So lassen sich laue Sommer- oder Herbstabende in München genießen. Doch wie kommt eigentlich mein Wein in die Flasche und in mein Glas? Genau dieser Frage sind wir nachgegangen. Mit unserem Team waren wir am Gardasee in Muniga del Garda und haben einen kleinen idyllischen Familienbetrieb besucht.
I'm Nicole Vezzola from Costa Rica. I am the fourth generation of this family-based winery in Valtenese on the Lake of Garda. For us, the most important thing is really to give value to our land, to our identity. So our winery produces mostly rosé wine in order to try to go back to our roots where everything started in the 1800s. For us, wine, a qualitative wine, a good wine, not only has to have good grapes, good climate and good terroir, but also it has to combine all the three variables that I just mentioned in order to be coherent with the identity of the soil and the terroir and the appellation.
Stolz führt sie uns über das Weingut und erklärt uns hier und da interessante Fakten. Die Tour starten wir an einem sonnigen Sonntagvormittag über das riesige Weingut. Genau dort hat es angefangen, an diesem einen Weinfeld. Nicole führt uns zu den Weinreben und fängt an zu erzählen.
We always start our visits on the vineyards, simply really because we always give a lot of credit to the wine, with a nice label, nice packaging, oh, this wine is amazing, but without great grapes and raw materials, you cannot really make qualitative wine. Since we are lucky to have some of our vineyards around the winery, we always want to show a little bit more and especially give more information about why we produce what we produce. So we are a rosé winery. We produce mostly rosé. 60% of our production is based on rosé wines, divided between still and sparkling wines. And one of the main reasons is in this land called Valtenese, that goes from Desenzano up to Salò. It's been producing rosé since the end of the 1800s. So for us, rosé is not a trend. Is not cool, okay, it's a tradition. So it's a part of our identity. It's not just being like, hey, you know, rosé, it's a trend, let's start making rosé wines. And the reason why is for Gruppello Gentile, which is the main and indigenous grape of this land. And so we really try to underline and give value to our identity and tradition. It's like being in Barolo and not making Barolo. Okay, we are in Valtenese, we have to make rosé. We are the northern point in Europe where you have lemon trees. You know, there is a town called Limone because we have lemons. We have capers, indigenous capers. We produce olive oil. But in the same time, in less than 2 hours, you are on the pre-Alps and Alps and skiing, which is quite bizarre, I would say. Especially when you think to all the lemon trees, you think to the south of Italy, to Positano, to Capri, not really the Lake of Garda, for instance. So we have a niche of Mediterranean climate, very up in the north, that obviously helps us a lot to have this specific production. And as you can see all around you, you have hills. Hills that goes up and up more towards the mountains. You see how they are growing? You see, they start very low and then more you go up and you cannot see there is the Baldo there, which is a bigger mountain, usually with some snow and glacier. Okay, and this is help us. It's called a morainic amphitheater. So it basically protects us from the northern wind that comes from Franciacorta, for instance. So from here to Franciacorta are 2.5 degrees of differences, which is a lot. Consider for the terroir, we have 65 different kind of terroir. The Lake of Garda has a glacier origin, so when the lake came down, it brought with him a lot of different kind of soils, mostly clay and gravelly, especially on the end part of the lake, so on the south part of the lake. And this gives mostly elegance, softness, finesse, and also some saltiness on our wines. And then Gruppello Gentile, which is very similar to Pinot Noir, and it's thanks to the Gruppello Gentile that we can also showcase all this diversity that we have in the terroir. Because it doesn't cover the identity and the characteristic that we have, but actually we'll be able to showcase and make you feel them, let's say, in the wine as well. And this weather excursion helps a lot as well. You see how the mornings are very nice and light. During the day, it's warm, hot, and in evening, it's chill. That helps a lot to get the lymph up. So the maturation of the grape is actually still happening. So it's not just about the sun, because you see, you basically all our grapes are hidden from the sun. So it's not the maturation that comes only because there is the sun hitting them, so it changed the color and the sugar level, which is cool. But it's more about the lymph that comes up. Okay, that makes them better, let's say, that makes them mature.
Dass dieser Besuch geklappt hat, war pures Glück. Wir haben sehr viele Betriebe angefragt, aber oft kam keine Antwort oder ausschließlich Absagen. Der Grund war recht simpel oder ist recht simpel. Wir sind mitten in der Erntezeit. Diese geht von August bis Mitte, Ende September. Und klar, dass sie da nicht unbedingt Zeit für ReporterInnen haben. Aber Nicole hat sich extra für uns Zeit genommen. Denn bei Costa Rica ist es auch nicht anders.
So, we already started the harvest in the 18th of August for the classical method. So Chardonnay and Pinot Noir has already been harvested. And we finish it, I would say, around the beginning of September. And tomorrow, if everything goes right, we start the harvest of the red grapes for rosé and the reds. It's a tricky moment for most of the wineries because we are family wineries. So everyone is really involved in the harvest, and it's very hard to find the way to combine everything. And also because most of the wineries are small wineries.
Auf dem Weinfeld sind die Weinreben in schön säuberlichen Reihen angepflanzt. An den Enden jeder dieser Reihe steht entweder eine Rose oder Hagebutte, wie mir auffällt. Und diese scheint so zwischen den ganzen Trauben etwas fehl am Platz zu sein. Was es damit auf sich hat, erklärt mir Nicole.
Basically, roses usually they are more fragile and delicate about and compared to the vines. So if there is any insect, bacteria, fungus, and like this, they will attack roses first. So at least we know that something is happening, so we can work according, yeah, in the vineyard. It's an indicator of the healthiness of the vineyard. So they're quite useful.
Der Wein ist generell eine sehr sensible Pflanze, die viel, viel Pflege braucht. Aber nicht nur das spielt eine Rolle. In den letzten Jahrzehnten, Jahrhunderten haben auch die Mikroorganismen im Boden ziemlich abgenommen. Dagegen hilft unter anderem Pflügen. Damit kommt mehr Sauerstoff in den Boden und es animiert sogar die Wurzeln, nach unten zu wachsen, anstatt nach oben. Das hat etliche Vorteile, wie zum Beispiel Wasser und Nährstoffe, die in größerer Tiefe vermehrt vorkommen. Und wenn die Wurzeln nach oben wachsen würden, dann würden sie da meistens nur Trockenheit finden oder auch die Verschmutzung, die aus der Luft sich natürlich erst an der Oberfläche ablegt.
The vines have memory and say, okay, I cannot come up because I will be hurt. Okay, so I have to go down. And in this way, you can just make them grow deeper and deeper. So you have maybe roots of 14, 15 meters in Valtellinese, or even 30, 40 meters Burgundy or in Champagne. So the roots and the vines, they have no problem just growing deeper. It's not raining for like 2 weeks, a month, and I'm thirsty. I will just go down for another meter. I'm just gonna look for water. Something that they could not do if they would come upstairs, if they would come in surface. So the idea is that we have to try to make our vineyards last longer and better and be healthier. That's why it's important for us to make our vines live longer, because this is our patrimony. If every 10 years, 15 years, we have to rechange and rebuild, it's just a waste of time, of money, energy, and quality. Because for us, the most important thing is having a long vineyard in order to have better grapes, to have a better wine. So if we change every 10 years, that would not be possible. Now, the average age of the vines that we have as today is about 25 years of age.
Der Klimawandel beeinflusst auch den Weinanbau spürbar. Die Anbauorte ändern sich, die Erntezeit beginnt früher und so weiter. Alles wird beeinflusst durch die wärmer werdenden Temperaturen. Viel machen, außer hoffen und sich anzupassen, können auch die WinzerInnen um den Gardasee nicht.
You cannot do much. You can just have to adapt, I have to say. But harvest season is changing all around the world. Now everyone is making wine, even in Peru, in Argentina. They were not making wine before because the temperature as well, even in South Africa. England is making wine because of the climate change. So they say, okay, now it's getting warmer. I have the perfect situation to have my vines to grow. The terroir is the same of Champagne. I'm gonna make Todo Clásico. It's just that every vintage right now is like a random act of God, let's say. Mm-hmm. Last year we had three hailstorms. We lost 20% of our Gruppello Gentile. This year in Franciacorta they had a huge frost in May that and hailstorm as well, and they destroyed a lot of Chardonnay, for instance. So this year is good now, but we haven't harvested yet. So tomorrow I'll let you know better. But last year we were very happy of how the harvest was, you know, seems to be. So we're like, how is the harvest this year? Oh, it's supposed to be good. The grapes are amazing. Three hailstorms during harvest season. So now I'm careful of what I say about the harvest until the harvest started at least. But the grapes look good, so we are happy about that. And that's the most important thing. I don't think it will be more about quantity, but quality it's supposed to be good. So I would say knock on wood, just in case.
Vom Weinfeld machen wir uns auf den Weg zu einem angrenzenden Haus. Es ist ein altes Steinhaus mit einem Holzdach und es ist sehr einladend gebaut. Betreten tun wir das Haus durch einen Flur und im Flur sind viele matte, rosa Blumen, die schon ein bisschen so an die Farbe von Roséwein erinnern. Und im nächsten Raum wird es noch konkreter, denn hier wird die Geschichte von Costa Rica und ihrem Roséwein erzählt. Denn Roséwein ist eigentlich gar nicht so ein einfacher Wein, wie der ausschaut oder wie es sich anhören mag. Da steckt auch viel Arbeit drin und es ist auch nicht gerade einfach zum Produzieren.
Rosé, it's expensive to make and it's very technical. So you can imagine, in Valtellina, for instance, Rosé is made with only red grapes, right? You can imagine my grandpa, after the Second World War, they had to decide what to make with the red grape that he has. Head. I make you an example. I give you an example. If I harvest 10 kilos of red grapes in order to make a red wine, I have usually a 75% yield, which means 10 kilos of red grapes, 7.5 liters of must. If I harvest the same grapes, so it would cost me the same, 10 kilos to make a rosé, a good rosé, I have a 55% yield. So I get 5.5 liters. It means that I have to throw away 45% of my work. Because we talk always about the harvest of the cool moment, but in order to arrive at the harvest, it's a year work in the vineyards. So imagine my grandpa waking up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, going with a horse, working all the vineyards, and then arrive the harvest, and like you get all your grapes and say, okay, grandpa, let's just throw away almost 0.5% of your work. Maybe not. Okay, the priority back at the time was having food on the table, not making the cool rosé. So giving up so much, it was a very brave decision, but also complicated decision to have. Here we were all farmers. We didn't have counts, princes and kings and castles and this kind of cool people. So for us, wine was just part of the table. It was just to support the family. So with red grapes, it was normal to make red wine. So usually on a cultural level, they started to make rosé with just leftover grapes. I have some extra grapes, I make rosé. I have rotten grapes, oh, I make rosé. Maybe you are young, so you don't have this kind of bias, but usually rosé has always been seen as a summer drink and a girly drink. And it's very simple how this bias started. There are two ways in order to correct, let's say, or hide wine's imperfection, and in a very cheap way. temperatures of service. I can serve you not so good wine at 4 degrees, and it's good. It's drinkable. You don't taste anything, but it's good. Okay. And also sugar. So that's why summer, and that's why usually more a feminine palate. So you were tasting this wine in August with 35 degrees, you were drinking nice and cold, amazing. Then you were taking it home and drinking in October, you were not drinking at 4 degrees because, you know, maybe some degrees more. It's like, this is not the same wine. It's not the same wine. It's just that you're drinking in a different temperature and now you're tasting the wine. Okay, so you, history speaking, we created this bias. And now it's very hard to break. So I don't know how much rosé you drink, but how much your mom and dad rosé they drink? Do they drink rosé at your family? Do you have memories of seeing your mom and dad drinking rosé?
Usually in the summer.
And that's it. Maybe in summertime, maybe it seems more like a chill situation. You're nice in the patio, in a terrace, and you have a nice glass of rosé wine. But it's never been considered a wine. So the aim that we are trying to create here, not only in Costa Rica, but in Valtellinese, is having a wine first, and the color is just a consequence of our vinification. But it has to be a wine first. So it has to have persistency, structure, and everything. Do you know how rosé is made?
No.
So you tasted the Grappello Gentile, right? And you see that the skin is red, but the inside, the pulp, is transparent. It doesn't really have a color. So the hard part of, and that's why you have to give up so much of the grapes, is that the color is given by the contact of the skin with the must. So more contact I have, more color I will have as well. Okay, so in rosé, I have to find the compromise between the color, the pigmentation that is between, like in the skin, within the skin. But within the skin, it would be too easy otherwise. Do I only have the color? No. Okay, within the skin, I also have the minerality, the structure, a little bit of the tannins, the flavor, the taste. So I have to find the perfect balance and common point between extract the meaning of being a wine, so the taste, as I mentioned, the structure, the persistence, the identity of my grape, but not the color, which is reside all in the skin. So that's why I cannot keep it too long. So we have as today between 30, 45 minutes contact, skin and must. The red, they stay even overnight. But for rosé, it's very short. In that 45 minutes, I have to get everything out. But I cannot mechanically press. I can only press by gravity. So I take my grapes, I take the wood part away, so I only have the raisin. The raisin go in the press, but the press doesn't really work. So the press is just turning. And the reason why is that the pressing is done by gravity. So the grapes on each other, they press. Okay, it's just done like this. So the grapes, they will break more in a clean way. They will not just smash, okay? They will have a nice cut, so then I can balance better, okay, the release of the identity of the wine, but not really the color. So it's a lot of technical parts in making a good rosé wine. And something that is very important for you to know is that the color of rosé is not an indication of quality. Because I can make a perfect, nice, pale rosé, which is big in trend right now, with rotten grape. I just don't leave the maceration for too long, and you have a nice color. Is it a wine? I don't know. Okay. So would you ever ask to a Bordeaux to have the same color of a Burgundy? Probably not. Okay. Would you ever ask to a Barolo to have the same color of a Chianti? Probably not. Okay, different grapes, different areas, different wines. So why do we ask to a rosé from Spain to have the same color of a rosé from France? Are the same grapes? No. Same climate? No. Maybe so, then different wines. It's different colors, as that happened in the south of Italy and in the north of Italy. It's normal. We have different shades of white wine, different shades of red wines, different shades of rosé wines. And they are not an indicator of quality. Okay, they are just an indicator of profile, of land. In Puy, in Apuy, okay, in the south of Italy, you have warmer weather than here. Their indigenous grapes are stronger than ours. So it's normal that their rosé has a different profile than ours. It will be, we are the opposite, right? If we want to respect the identity of a land. So this is very important for us to talk about, because rosé is not really known too much. So cultural, we have to do this cultural revolution.
Von dieser kleinen Geschichtsexkursion gehen wir weiter durch verschlungene Gänge und kommen irgendwann in einem größeren Raum mit Stahlkesseln an. Es riecht fruchtig, süß, säuerlich, als ob hier frisch Traubensaft gepresst worden wäre. Nicole fängt an zu erzählen, wie sie ihren Aushängewein hier herstellen, worauf sie Acht geben, was wichtig ist und was eigentlich die gute Qualität beim Wein ausmacht.
So in the classical method you work by blend. The same things with the rosé. Our most important rosé is called Rosa Mara, okay, and it's created by 25 different selection. What does it mean? Rosa Mara is made with four red grapes: Groppello Gentile, Marzemino, Sangiovese, and Barbera. But I do not vinify separately only the four red grapes, because let's say a Groppello Gentile from a 10 years vine, is it the same of a 25 years wine? No. Also, we are what we eat, right? The same things, the vines. So if there is more clay, if there is more gravelly, the kind of terroir, it will also influence the profile of the grapes. So what we did is that we identified 25 different profiles between Groppello, Marzemino, Sangiovese, and Barbera, and then we have to make them play together, like an orchestra. Okay, if I only have five instruments, I can play a certain music. What if I have a full orchestra? It will have more complexity, more even emotion, more dynamic. You can be definitely more, let's say, specific in your profile, in your details. And that's the same with wine. More selection I have, more chances I have to be coherent and constant, not only in my profile, but also in my quality. Quality today, it's an very overstated word. No one will tell you, yeah, you know, my wine a little bit horrible. I don't make quality really. No, everyone would say they make qualitative wine, they have quality this and that. The most important thing is being constant with your quality. I would say like Tignanello. It's one of the most important Italian wines. It's not there because it's been great 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Tignanello has been great because for 20 years he's been producing great wines. Okay, Ferrari is Ferrari and Lamborghini is Lamborghini. You would spend that amount of money on cars not because they've been great for 2 years, but because for the last 30 years they've been making amazing cars. But their profile is different. Lamborghini will always be different from a Ferrari, because they have their own identity and it's been constant through the year. If you take a Ferrari of today and a Ferrari 20 years back, it's different, I agree, but it's coherent in their style. In wine, it's extremely hard to make the same, because every year we have different vintages, different harvests. But it's important to try to be coherent and constant, not only in the quality part, but also in profile, to have your own signature. As I said, Lamborghini will always be different from Ferrari. Is there is one better than the other? No, it depends on what you like. The same idea with wine. So more selection I have, more in details I can go. It's like if I have to tell you to describe a person with four adjectives or 20. With four, I can just be very, you know, general. If I have to go in details instead, you can definitely understand better the person that I'm talking to. And that's the same idea with wine. So as today, we almost have 100 stainless steel and 620 barrels to work by blend, to have everything separate and then, you know, we work with selection. So we have a little bit of work.
Wir gehen weiter und kommen in einen Nebenraum. Der ist viel dunkler, die Decke ist nicht so hoch. Und eins fällt auf, es sind sehr, sehr viele Sektflaschen aufgestellt. Fein säuberlich in so einem Gestell, wo man sie mit einem Flaschenhals nach vorne einsteckt. Die Sektflaschen sind auch schon alle etwas staubig, denn sie liegen hier ja auch schon seit 2017. Aus einem Teil des Weines, was hier bei Costa Rica produziert wird, wird nämlich auch Sekt hergestellt. Dieser muss dann erstmal reifen und gären, damit Kohlensäure entsteht. Für diese Sektherstellung gibt es zwei klassische Methoden, wie Nicole erklärt.
There are two methodology in order to have bubbles. One is called Metodo Martinotti, okay? And one is called Metodo Classico, classical method. The most famous, the most known wine of Metodo Martinotti, Charmant, it's called Prosecco, which is in Veneto. Prosecco, it's only made in Veneto. Veneto in Friuli Venezia Giulia, like a specific area. Metodo Classico, or also known Metodo Champenoise. Champagne is one of the most important unknown appellation, but also Franciacorta or Trento DOC, for instance. The difference, I do it in a very simple way, is that the fermentation, because in order to have the bubble, you have to ferment. In the Prosecco / Metodo Martinotti / Metodo Charmant, okay, this is done in a huge stainless steel. So I have my wine in a huge stainless steel. I add yeast and sugar. The yeast eat the sugar, it ferment, and it created the pressure, okay? And after that, you bottled, okay? This process could take 3 months, 6 months, according to the philosophy of every winery. For the classical method instead, this fermentation happens within every single bottle. So what I do, in March, my dad have all his little tiny glasses of all his selection. He creates the blend, he creates his orchestra, let's say, and then put yeast and sugar in each and one bottle. And then what happened? You have some rules to follow. So in Champagne, the minimum staying on the yeast is 15 months. The minimum staying on the yeast for Franciacorta is 18 months, which means that once I bottle, and this is for us happened in March, from that moment on, it start the aging on the yeast. So for I harvest in September 2021, I bottled in March 2022, and in that moment start the aging on the yeast. So I leave my bottles horizontal, so there is more contact with the yeast and sugar with the wine, okay? And I leave it rest. There, I call them my sleeping beauty because they just stay there for like even more than a year. For us, there, the aging on the yeast, the minimum that we do is 3 years aging on the yeast.
Von der Sektherstellung geht's jetzt weiter Richtung Keller. Wir gehen durch ein Treppenhaus und es wird mit jedem Schritt modriger und feuchter. Aber in einer positiven Art, so wie man es von einem Weinkeller erwartet. Im Keller angekommen, erwartet uns ein atemberaubender Anblick. Es sind hohe, beleuchtete Deckenbögen, als ob man in einer alten Schatzkammer wäre. Überall stehen Holzfässer in verschiedenen Größen und darin reift der angehende Wein.
Here we have roughly 620 barrels. They're all white oak and most of them they come from Burgundy. And they've been already been used for 2-3 years before coming here. So we really don't use new barrels. And the reason why is that as a profile, as an appellation, we have more elegance, finesse. And so if we would use a new barrel, they will just cover up all our identity. So we prefer to use old barrels. We keep them also for 20, 30, 40 years until they don't break, we keep them with us. Okay. What makes a wine or a great wine? Usually it's time. Okay, so the most important wines that you can have in your mind are wine that can grow with you. When you want to give to someone a special gift and you want to buy a bottle of wine, you don't get like a super young wine. You get a wine at an important vintage or that can age for 10, 20 years. That gives value to a wine, time, you know? In the rosé world, no one really cared about time because in rosé, you just had to drink it in the season. So to a rosé wine, it's never been asked to age. So if we want to make it a wine, then I have to make my wine age. So Rosamara, for instance, it can age with no problem for 5 to 6 years. Molmenti, which is a reserve still rosé wine, it can age 20 years. But I mean, is the raw materials are the same of a red grape or a red wine. They're red grapes. So why I cannot be able to work in a way to make my wine grow? If the raw materials are the same, there must be a reason, there must be a way. The passage in barrels that help to stabilize the color, but also the profile of the wines. So all our wines, they go through barrels.
In dem Keller geht's durch einen anderen Gang in eine komplett andere Richtung weiter. Und langsam ändert sich auch die Ambiente. Es wird etwas moderner, betonlastiger. Wir kommen durch einen unterirdischen Gang in einen modernen Anbau, wie uns Nicole erzählt.
So behind this door, there is actually the reason why we created this building. So if we produce 200,000 bottles of classical method, and as I mentioned, we have usually an average age on the yeast of 3 years, which means that right now in stock here, we have at least 600,000 bottle resting. And this is the space that they take.
Hinter den Türen erblicken wir eine riesige klimatisierte Lagerhalle mit mindestens 10 Metern Deckenhöhe. Nicole ist sichtlich stolz auf die hier lagernden Flaschen.
See why we couldn't fit it in the old winery. Yeah. So here they are all resting. Temperature is very important, as you can feel it. Okay, so at least no fermentation, it will continue or restart or anything.
Hier sind wir auch bei der letzten Station der Führung angekommen. Die Flaschen, die bei dieser kalten Temperatur lagern, damit sie nicht mehr weitergären können, können dann bald in den Verkauf oder auch in die Verkostung gehen. Und natürlich darf am Schluss so einer Führung auch eine Verkostung nicht fehlen. Was man nicht alles für seinen Job als Reporter macht, sonntags um 11 Uhr in der Früh Wein und Sekt zu trinken. Aber was man nach der Verkostung sagen kann, die Handarbeit und die Qualität, die da reingesteckt wurde, in den Roséwein oder in den Rosésekt, die schmeckt man definitiv. Vielen Dank an Nicole Wetzoller von Costa Ripa, dass sie uns ihr Weingut und ihre Weinproduktion gezeigt hat, denn mitten in der Erntezeit war das, wie gesagt, nicht selbstverständlich. Und ihr an den Endgeräten holt euch am besten jetzt auch einen leichten, gekühlten Roséwein und stößt auf einen schönen Sonnenuntergang an. Salute und alles Gute.
M94.5 to go.
M94.5 to go ist eine M94.5 Produktion. Ein Angebot der Media School Bayern.